Wash.
Hey, Wyndham, what's up?
What? Why was 6 afraid of 7?
I don't know, Wyndham. Why was 6 afraid of 7?
Because Higurashi ate 9.
Huh? There's no book 89, Wyndham. What are you talking about?
Welcome to Higurashi When They Podcast.
The podcast was 7 East 9.
I'm Random Bystander here.
What episode is this? That's the next episode.
9!
That's the next episode. I was gonna make a pun, but that's the next episode. I'm the Wash.
Wow, this opening is such a mess. I don't know, I got ran over by a truck. It was down.
That's good enough then, okay. Kirby, what is this? Because apparently there's only 8 books, but...
Yes, okay, so Higurashi 9. So it was 2006, that was when Higurashi, the original 8 books, had originally wrapped up their run, and that was kind of it. For a little while, you know, it was the original 8 books. That was the run. That's what most people, even some people today, see as the full completed story of the original Higurashi novels. But shortly after, I guess like half a year, it was still 2006. It was the next Comic-Con, that place where Higurashi was sold. It was the next one of those. Ryukishi came out with a little set of bonuses. One of them we just don't talk about. It doesn't exist. One of them, that pool party that they talk about having at the very beginning, one of them is actually that pool party. It's pretty fun. The only thing that I remember about it is Oishi wanting to bar off the pool, so he calls in, like, the army or something weird. I don't remember too much about it, but whatever, get enough time. But the meat and potatoes of that one was this, a official follow-up of sorts to the original novels. Now, like I was saying before, not too many people really saw this as Higurashi 9. A lot of people just kind of saw this as a bonus. But as the years went on, and as some other things were kind of shown to us that happened in some things that could also potentially be seen as canon, I don't want to get too deep into that. But with all that, Higurashi 9 was kind of started to actually be seen like, wait a minute, no, this is an official follow-up, Higurashi 9. And I see it as a Higurashi 9, like, an official follow-up. So why not go through it for the podcast, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about it. So I have a funny story when reading this chapter.
Is it that you were, like, really mad that Rika got ran over by the truck?
No, actually. Yeah, never mind. I was pissed at one point, but it wasn't that, actually.
I was, like, really, really worried that when Satoko shouted, Rika, look out, that you would just get so mad and, like, quit. I would see a Discord message just saying, I quit the podcast.
I literally was like, fuck you! But we'll get... So I was able to watch this on my phone. Usually I would watch it on my computer. But this time I was like, oh, I'll watch it on my phone in my comfy, cozy bed. And I'm sure it'll be great, and I'll watch it, and then I'll go to sleep, and it'll be fine. It was not fine, because at one point, my first watch through, I remember getting to the point where Rika first talks to Hanyu. I close my eyes, then I open it, and Rika is drunk. So.
Oh my god.
And I was like, whoa, okay.
Where are you drinking some of Rika's alcohol?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, we need another couple days before we can record the episode.
Oh no, so you were not ready to make it through.
No, I was exhausted. But you know what? I read it.
Yeah.
And it was I have thoughts.
I was surprised that I was the first to make it through.
Yeah, very early, even before me. That's a first.
But I finished this a few days ago. I'm gonna need to suck through my notes again because I feel like some of it like went past me, and especially towards the ending, I was like, "What is going on?" And I just kind of just blazed I just blaze through as much as I can. It's like, I'll figure it out when we talk about it.
Again, it got to the point where I would literally watch it in bed. And sometimes where it would be, and where I would literally like have the computer running on in my room and just watch it in bed without headphones because I was just so tired. And I was like, I can't experience it like this.
No.
So you got to take your time. You got to take your time and experience it how it was meant to be experienced. I'm rambling, but that's okay. It was nine, but yeah.
It was nine.
I was pissed. I forgot about how pissed I was when I started because I just eventually rolled with it. And I was just like, fine. You gotta lengthen it somehow. Fine, killer. Do it. All those fucking hours of doing chapter 8 fragments didn't fucking matter. Fine.
This is a Sesame Me thing, and this might be too cush to keep in the final edit, but I immediately thought of Family Guy.
Yeah. Oh my God, Brian, look out.
Not only that, but specifically, I was thinking of a much earlier episode. I think it's called Brian Wallows and Peter Swallows. Where Brian looks after this old lady that's been trapped inside this house for decades, and he finally convinces her to come out of the house, and she says, "Oh, Brian, I miss so much. I wouldn't be standing here. I wouldn't be standing right here if it wasn't for you." Boom! Immediately hit by a truck. That's what this was. It's just
we do see everyone having a nice beach party.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Oh my god. When Rika was ran over by the truck, that complete whiplash. I can't be the only one who thought of the good dinosaur. Come on, Arlo.
Oh, we're not doing this. Fine.
Randa, come on.
Take it like the truck took Rika's life.
Oh my God.
Good Lord.
I'm barely varying. But yeah, they had fun in the pool.
They look at KT's furry seal, which was a euphemism that took me way too long to figure out.
Really? I figured it out right away. It wasn't just a euphemism, it was a reference now too.
Yeah, Higurashi won. The one that we all read in what feels like, I don't know, 10 years ago.
It does, honestly.
That was a very nice callback, Ryukichi.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Did you get hit by a truck?
Did you get hit by a truck?
Which apparently reminded Wash of a Family Guy episode.
I was thinking of the Family Guy episode. I was like, oh, okay, I guess, yeah. I feel like I had something in my nose, or maybe just a thought, or maybe I said it in the podcast, but I did have the thought that it's like, what if she did all that work? She finally made it past June, and then she died immediately. It's dumb, but I was like, okay, we'll see where this goes. I wasn't as pissed, mainly because it's just like, I just kind of... It's kind of like if this was the ending of book 8.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
But yeah, I remember reading this for the first time and just being really, really curious, like where the story was going to go.
Yeah, where is this going? And plus, like, you can very easily just like read those first eight books and then come and ignore this one. This one is an addendum. It's kind of fanficky, even though it's from the original writer. It just kind of expands on the previous ideas, and we'll talk about how it expands on those ideas.
Indeed.
But yeah, she gets hit by a truck.
Oh God, yeah. When she first wakes up, and she's like, "Okay, I just have to go through everything again. We'll get back to normal. Everything. It'll take a while, but it'll be fine." But then, like, the more she sees, the more she just has to sit there and be like, oh.
And Yamamoto, there's just a guy called Yamamoto.
Yeah. So,
no Uishi.
Funny thing about that, actually. It started playing like the big bear music when the doctor was like about to be introduced. And I thought for a split second, oh my God, it's Dr.
Yeah,
Ouija.
Yeah, but no, for real. Could you imagine Ouija just walking in like a total doctor?
I thought what you were going to go with is like, oh my God, it's Dr. Takano. Like, I genuinely was ready for it to be like.
I was ready for that too. And they did tease that, but technically, yes, but no.
Well, no, straight up,
they
no.
Played the music that, they played the music that plays when Ouija visits the kids in book 7 and teaches them mahjong, that music. So that's why I thought, oh my God, it's Dr. Ouija. And it's just someone without a sprite. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a weird decision. I mean, I kind of get it because he's a non-character.
I mean, yeah, there's that. But you also have to keep in mind that this whole thing was made on a budget. This is just kind of a bonus story that he wrote for people to kind of get, I don't know about more closure, yeah. But just to give Rika that sense of closure and for people to experience that.
Yeah, exactly. Like we kind of get the idea. And plus, like, we're like 9 books into this. We're used to important characters not having sprites.
Yeah.
Even when they should. Tepe in book 3.
Or you, at all.
Or you, yeah, or you.
So, okay, how did we react when Rika wakes up, thinks everything over, sees Satoshi, panics, but then specifically when she sees Satoko...
I was so sad.
Yeah. Satoko doesn't talk to her, and she just has to deal with it.
There's, like, nothing, really. There's nothing really, happy? Nice?
Yeah. I mean, everything technically is nice because it's technically, quote unquote, a world without sin. Everything's technically good.
I would not say technically. I think like everything actually is good. It's just that it doesn't vibe with Rika.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. It is all good. We'll get into the specifics later. But also, like they talk about later. Everything is quote unquote good. I think hollow would probably be the word that I would use to describe how everything feels.
Yeah, because she's just not used to this environment. And she's not used to these people.
Isn't just that she's not used to everyone. They still didn't go through all of their struggles. And they're just hollow. Like, Rena never had to leave the village. She never had problems with her parents.
Yeah.
Satoko was okay with her parents for the whole time. Keiichi never had that incident. Even the dam war, it just kind of got settled.
Everybody's getting fully compensated. They're ready for the move. They've already had the move. As we find out much later, Rika's old friends were the two dipshit boys.
Oh, yeah, it's such a good name for them. We barely even talked about them throughout the entirety of the podcast.
We really never mentioned in the podcast except for, like, one time.
Yeah. Well, they're like, the front and center at the big court case in the...
I hate to say it, they're the scrappy dudes of Igarashi.
I wouldn't go that far. They're not, like, annoying. They're just non-existent.
I mean, yeah, I guess it could be worse. They could be weird.
But apparently it mattered a lot to Rika, and it's through this where, like, I think it was Mion that just kind of, that just too so bitch, so direct.
Do you know why?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this. Because this is the quote-unquote ideal world, that mix-up with Mion and Shion probably never happened. So when Mion is acting, like, really mean and kind of out of character, that isn't character. It's not even Mion. It's Shion. And we've read 9 books by now. We know Shion.
Yeah, so... And imagine Shion running the classroom.
God, yeah. One disagreement and things are just gonna get, awkward. But yeah, back on track. They never switched places.
Yeah, they never did. This is a world where everything...
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a world where they never switched places. This is a world where Keiichi never visited Hinamizawa. This is a version where the dam war never happened. This is a version where
Rena is Rena.
Yes.
Okay. Quick little tangent, because I gotta go on these things at least once per episode, apparently. But big part of Rena's character being that she changed her name, and because she never left home, she never changed her name. Everybody calling Rena by her dead name. This isn't like a problem with the story or anything, but I don't know, as a trans woman, and especially because I relate to Rena so much.
It's you. Yeah. It's you. It's a personal
thing. Yeah, exactly. But still, like...
No, but as I was saying, it's like Mion / Sion. She...
As if they didn't switch places enough.
Well, she switched places. So she just flat out said, you know, like, those boys just kind of pampered you. And that was what made me realize, oh, I've always been pampered.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not getting the, you know, I don't have the immediate friend group that I have. I guess I have to work to get that friend group. Oh, fuck it. I'll just kill my mom.
We'll get to that. we'll get to that. We still have a lot more differences that we got to talk about. Like, for example, the Takano Clinic, named after the grandfather who, I guess, but yeah, Takano's nowhere to be found, which means...
Yeah, she probably took that bus ride with her parents, went to the mall, and finished her flag collection.
Yeah, because it's a perfect
world. Yeah, that's
world.
True. She probably just made it to the train ride, like at the ending of book 8.
Yeah, which means no Tamatake, no Ire... that guy.
Okay, Yamamoto.
Yamamoto, thank you.
Yamamoto, yeah.
He doesn't have a sprite.
I know we bought him up already, but I don't know. I wish this guy, especially now, just like could have been Oishi. Could you imagine him just like being here and actually getting along with everybody, teaching the kids how to ballroom dance?
Random said that to me.
I literally messaged Juan. So why couldn't he teach the children to ballroom dance? Even if it was just a cameo. Come on.
I didn't like to think of it as like that one gif from Yakuza where it's like the two dudes like dancing on the disco.
Oh my God.
That's what I'm picturing,
yes,
like Oishi
yes, yes,
and
yes,
the foreman.
Yes. Wait, no. Wait. Oishi and Akasaka.
Yeah,
Akasaka. Oh, Akasaka. Well, but that would be the hot fudge story though.
And,
that wouldn't be quite the same.
And besides, there's no kidnapping happened, so Akasaka and Oishi wouldn't have met, which is makes it the worst timeline.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, it's the worst timeline that Akasaka gets to just spend time with his wife during the pregnancy and eventually just become a good father.
No hot fuzz.
Okay, sure.
Anyway.
Let's please move on.
Yeah, anyway, the biggest change, with at least to Rika, is that, Satoko, my best friend, she hates me now.
Hits her in the head with a ball, and she's kind of like...
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, it didn't really seem that she hated Rika, just, like, indifferent. Like, you're just nothing right now. And especially as we find out, like, she's the kid that's just in the back of the class, like, SpongeBob. It's just, like, cool is for chumps, where am I? So it's, like, I can totally see that, like, for Satoko, she's just like the invisible girl, and she's like, it would be kind of funny to like poke at her, but like, the relationship really sours really badly.
Yeah.
I was getting flashbacks of what was it, book 5?
Yeah, Satoko
like,
being beat up by that's who.
The Sion beating up Satoko. But can somebody just leave Satoko the fuck alone?
Yeah, it's like she's got a track record for this.
No, honestly, Satoko...
It's always Satoko being beaten up with a chair.
Honest to God, though.
In the classroom.
She was kind of a... She was really mean to Rika at that one
point. I don't care! She doesn't...
You know what, Satoko? She's an enabler. I said it.
Wait, an enabler?
What?
Hear me out.
No, because, like, okay, so I will let you hear this out, but at least consider this. Like, especially towards the end of her, quote, dream, Satoshi, Mion, and Reina they all came up to Rika saying, hey, we noticed that you've been having some trouble. We're here to reach out. let's do a club together and let's actually have some bonding. And this would have been a perfect opportunity for Rika and Satoko to actually bond from the start and just have a more natural friendship. They start to notice some of the similarities they have together. Maybe they can even taste cooking and stuff. It'd be a nice little thing. The nose, like Rika just kills her mom.
We'll get to that.
Why do you still say that Satoshi is an enabler?
No, I agree. You are right. They do try to fix things. I think it's even Satoshi's idea. Or is it Reina's? I don't know.
Well, all three of them came up with the idea, but Mion could clearly care less.
Yeah.
And even though Reina still cares, she did get pretty angry with Rika, like, really quickly. Satoshi was the only one who bothered to say, guys, you know, we came here to cheer up, right? Can we just calm down a little bit?
Yeah. See, I like that. I actually like that dynamic where you have, like, if you swatch out Keiichi with Satoshi, like, the balance completely shifts around where now, like, Reina is the one that's harsher.
Yeah, and I mean, it fits. We know how Reina can get.
Weirdly?
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, Reina was also, like, she did try to make Rika feel welcome and talk to her, at least, but again, as Rika said, it wasn't out of friendship, it was out of pity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the really sad thing, was just, like, she immediately noticed the pitying, but you could still, like, give people a chance, please.
Yeah, and not be stubborn and wanting and, you know, ungrateful.
And overly pampered.
Yeah, and hate your parents even though they raised you, take care of you, and are, you know, alive. You know what? Okay, Satoshi is not much of an enabler. What he does do, though, is he apologizes for Satoko when she doesn't really mean it. And doesn't really do much to fix that. Yeah, sure, he does the meeting, but we don't know what happened after that. And two, he still kind of pampers her. And is like, I'm sorry. I'm sure Satoko didn't mean it. I'm sure she didn't. Okay, bye. And it just...
Well, I mean, you're the brother here. Your sibling's is being kind of bratty. And you know that she... I wouldn't say means well, but she doesn't mean malice.
Yeah, exactly. But also, this lines up exactly with the Satoshi we know. He's not Keiichi. He's not the kind of guy who'll go out and, for lack of a better term, make trouble.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He'll apologize if his sister does something wrong because he's a good, responsible
kid. Yeah, but...
Sure.
He's very nice, almost to a fault, but if you push him too far, you will suffer the consequences.
You know what happened to him there because of that.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but I don't mind that so much for Satoshi's character. It lines up. I know I say things like, "Oh, he's so cute all the time," and let's be real here, I'm right. But that's not the only reason that I like Satoshi so much. He does have character.
I'll say that we did get a glimpse of Satoshi.
I'll take any Satoshi. All of this made me really happy.
I like him more. I'm liking more now. I get it.
Let's go.
I mean, it's not that I don't like him. He means well.
No, I will say that, like, I liked him a lot better this time around than I did in book five. And maybe that'll be, like, for a revisit, as if that'll ever happen. But I kind of liked the Satoshi in this one. And like I said, I especially liked when it's the three of them and suddenly there's a new dynamic in play here. It's like, this is interesting. This is what happens when you have, like, different personalities at play. And it's fun.
Yeah. And it also shows what would have happened if nothing bad happened with Satoshi. He would have been part of the friend group. And you know what? It's cool.
Sad, too.
He's the bigger brother, the bigger kid, and he was the oldest boy in the class now, right? Like the only older kid,
Keiichi's the only older boy in his class. Yeah. So same goes for Satoshi. It's especially noticeable here since the size of the classroom is so much smaller.
And that's true. Because of the there's no dam walls, and because the construction is underway, that means that the class is far smaller, which is it's also sad. It's especially sad where it's like it's a class of 10 and there's still the one kid that nobody talked to. Like I feel like at a group that small, like everybody would be close together, but there's still the one kid that they just kind of ignore. And they ostracize indirectly. It's just sad in its own way.
And I understand why Rika would be like, you know, upset about that in a way.
Yeah, so I guess this is the part where I gotta come in and say I completely understand why Rika did the things that she did, because I know a lot of what you're saying is that, oh, she can just get used to the new world and everything will be okay, but that's, this world is not what she fought for, right? Everything that she did in the other worlds, like, those were the friends that she was fighting for, and, like, because of how different these characters are, because of all the circumstances and stuff, I don't want to call them, like, strangers or anything, but they're not the same. And I know, obviously, the friends from Higurashi 8, for example, are not the same, technically, as they are in Higurashi 1, but those are the people that she really fought to be with. And it's like, yeah, you can try to get that back, but she fought to specifically get that happy ending, that moment that she'd been fighting for so long with the people from Higurashi 8. So I understand. I understand why she wants to go back. I understand why she wants to be together with those specific people. Keiichi's not even there. But, you know, like that Rena, that Mion, that Satoko, that Oishi, Tomotake, even people like that. I understand. And to even further kind of support that point, you can see that, like, I mean, Rika kind of comes to the idea herself that she wants to go back to the older world for her friends and stuff. But if you look at everybody that's currently in this world, the world of everything, quote unquote, good, there's not really, I mean, everyone's like casually friends, right? Yeah. But that closeness that the club members have, for example, there is nothing like that. Satoko plays ball with her friends because that's just it. It's like they're friends in school. You've had friends in school that you can't even think about. And that's kind of what they feel like here. Yeah. Just like the circumstance just so happened to kind of have them be together and everything. It's not like any moment or historical event or which. But that's kind of the thing with the original group, too, that you can say. It was like this big thing that brought them together. But it is all these little moments, just these happenstance things that really make them stay close to each other. Here, I don't really see them actually being friends if it weren't just for the fact that, you know, they went to the school together. You know, Higurashi is about this village camaraderie, and Rika feels that. Rika feels that camaraderie, and she really wants to go back, but you really don't get that feeling of closeness from the people in this classroom, like, at all.
Yeah, they're more like co-workers.
I guess, like at that point, like, everybody's going through the motions because, again, there's, like, we got, they said next year, right? Next year,
the whole village will have been underwater. Everybody will have moved on.
Yeah, so, like there's going to be a lot of different friendships that are going to go away, but I don't think it's not as close, but they're still going to, because these are characters that, like, grew up with each other for years and years. Like Reina, she's been there from the start. She never moved out of the Hinamizawa because they never went bankrupt. They never needed to. So she just had a better relationship with her parents. And yes, it's not like she's had, like, the lesson about the importance of family, but I mean, I would rather her having a happy family and just having the and making the most of her happiness. And that can also relate to the ending, which, again, we will talk about.
So I get what you're saying, but just in the interest of keeping things moving along.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that I find so cool about Higurashi 9 is that I have my conclusion, Random has his conclusion, and you have your conclusion. And this is actually something that we can talk about, like the decision that Rika makes whether it's right or wrong, if she did the right thing or not. Obviously, some of this is going to get into the ending, but I am still, I'm glad that it's kept open like this, but I'm still firmly in the camp of she should really go back. Like, look, I love Satoshi and everything, but just based on the merit that Keiichi isn't there after everything they had gone through, the fact that he's not there just really speaks volumes to, like, no, I think she should go back.
Not like you need him.
I mean, okay, but after everything they went through, I think she's gonna want.
No, they're still friends. Still, yeah, of course. And I know that it would be like if there was that sort of situation where one of you just turned out to just acted like cold towards me, then and I knew about the friendship we could have had, I'd be bummed out too. But also, like Rena said, that's an unknowable thing. We can never know what the right choice is. And that is more interesting than the actual choice. Because now, the thing is, we do know what would happen. And honestly, I think that because either way, Rika is haunted with the knowledge. So honestly, it would be better off to not murder your mom. This is a controversial opinion, but don't murder your parents.
Wow, Waj, are you getting political on a Higurashi podcast?
Look, I can't speak for either of you, but I am a true-blooded, I am truly against murder. I can't speak for the other ones. I can't say what their opinions are. Could be one way or the other. Who can say? And who can trust them, really? But for me, I'm against murdering your parents.
Random, what do you think?
What do I think? Well, I'm not really a fan of murdering my parents, especially if they've been dead the past 7-8 worlds that I've been part of. If they were murdered in all those worlds and suddenly they come alive. You know, I don't want to be the one to continue the tradition, if that makes any sense.
At the same time, what we've seen does actually like reflect back to what we saw, especially at Book 8. Was that, like, Rika never cared about her parents. She just always thought that her mom was annoying, and the dad in this case is just kind of there. He's busy with being a priest of the town, but, like, she doesn't have much of a bond with either of them. Like, for her parent, pretty much all her life, her parents' last friend was Hanyu. So she just never had had a connection, and now she's got the chance, and she doesn't care. She doesn't have the relationship at all, and there's something weird interesting about that.
That's another thing that Higurashi Nayan just tackles so well, I think. Like, Rika's inner turmoil of who am I, her own self-identity. Am I Rika? Am I this witch that's been crossing through timelines because the original Rika from when they started is just so far gone? Am I a brand of alcohol? Like, there's a lot that really goes into Rika's internal thought, and I think her, especially at this moment, she says, you know, I'm this witch who she deems as Frederica Berncastel. She has to kind of cope with that while at the same time, you know, despite everything that she's been through, she is still a 10-year-old kid. It's like you're saying, it's a lot. And that's just what I think is, like, so, so cool about it, that they're able to actually get across this feeling of not really fully knowing who you are, despite the fact that, you know, you're really just a 10-year-old kid. There's not too much more to it than that. But the places it goes can get pretty dark. Obviously, we were saying this one, it doesn't have too many laughs. Some chuckles here and there, but not that many laughs. But that kind of, it isn't so grim dark that you're just like, ugh. But I don't know. I like the tone of it. I like where it goes. And it's Rika herself. Things get pretty messed up. Obviously, you know, we're talking about the parents killing your mom thing. That's messed up.
Yeah, it's a creepy one, and I still say that there's a chance that of her to learn to be the original Rika, but also that it's like,
wait a minute,
what's up,
Frederica Burt? Is that the name of the person that made all those quotes in the beginning
yes.
of every single Higurashi.
Yes.
What? This is where it fucking came from?
You're just noticing
this
now.
You haven't noticed?
I spotted that immediately. But I didn't know what the fuck it... I thought it was just like some like random quote by like a random celebrity.
Oh, it was a random quote by the poem, by the poet that we see in the
beginning.
Yeah,
but I didn't know it was an actual person in the game. I didn't know the person would be referenced.
Well, I mean, the poems all had kind of relation to the stories that they were talking about. But aside from Frederica, kind of sounding like Fruta de Eureka, Rika's full name, Fruta de Eureka, Frederica, not too many similarities. Like, you could still kind of put the pieces together if, like, you really think about it, I guess, but...
I just figured that out now. Did Ryukichi plan this the entire time? No, he didn't.
I mean, like I said before, Frederica, Fruta de Eureka, they sound similar.
Frederica. Frederica.
Swear to God, if Ryukichi George Lucas this, I swear to God.
You mean George Lucas? When did George Lucas ever... If Rika became Jar Jar Binks, maybe.
Misa
I don't know.
Nipa!
Misa Nipa!
Rika shot first.
Oh.
Rika
shot... The Budweiser. Oh,
excellent.
God.
Excellent.
I know we can't don't name the episodes, but that's what it should
Well, that's
called.
Just what the re-releases of Higurashi 9 are called.
Takano Duct. Sorry.
Well, at least when Rika gets shot at, she can't freeze time.
I mean, technically with the anime, yes. But I just... I don't know why Rika... I get it. Like, I get it. She's supposed to figure out that, hey, she's not a god entity. She's not Hanyu. She shouldn't be worrying about this stuff. She should just be living her life. But my god, I just found her so ungrateful in these, like, last couple chapters. Like, I get it. I get it because she's not used to this and she wants the future she fought for. But, like, your parents are alive. They weren't alive. Ever.
I get what you're saying, but think about in all of the other stories, especially Higurashi 8, which chapter 5 went into more detail on, what is Rika's relationship with her parents? She kind of has a reason to just not get along with her parents at all, especially her mother. But also, like I've been saying a few times throughout the podcast, the core of the story is Rika not actually thinking that she's Rika, that she's the witch Brain Castell. And in that case, she doesn't even really see these people as her parents. She does actually specify in the story itself. This isn't just me going on a ramble for no reason. she specifies in the story that her parents, she doesn't really see as her parents. So it's... It's much different for her than it is for, like, the average person because she doesn't see her parents in that way. But the tragedy is that she actually does, because of how the world is set up, she actually does start to actually kind of care about her parents, or at the very least her mother. And when they start to get along, that's when Hanyu tells her, or that's when she finds out that she's going to have to kill her mother. And when she has that wake up moment and, you know, she's having that panic attack. Then that's when Hanyu, starts choking her?
Yeah. Yeah, she mind choked her like Darth Vader. George Lucas.
But the real important question, did Hanyu shoot her?
Hanyu shot her.
Oh, God. Can I just say, I get it, but like, I have to make this joke. Rika wakes up in the bed and sees all her friends. She's like, and you were there, Mihan, and you were there, Satoko, and you were there. and you were there. Oh, wait, you weren't there, Kichi. And you were there.
And Uichi, what are you doing
ballroom
here?
Ballroom dancing, duh.
Maybe I'm just pissed that Uichi wasn't in this, but also, like...
I wouldn't have bothered, but go ahead.
The it's a dream trope.
Okay, from that response, I am going to assume you interpreted that at face value.
I
can go into a whole other ramble about this, but before I do, Wash, I want to know, did you interpret that as, was it a dream? How did you interpret that?
Oh, did I interpret this as a dream? No.
Okay, all right, very good. We're in agreement. My answer is actually a little bit weird. If we're talking about the anime, I actually think that it was just a dream. Oh. But if we're talking about the novel, the sound novel, then like 100,000 trillion percent, I do not think that it was a dream.
I don't want it to be a dream, honestly. I just honestly thought it was, and there was no debate for it. But because literally a dozen Hanyu go like, haha, I did all this just to trick you.
Yeah, uh-huh. But that's only after Rika's having her panic attack about killing her own mother, who she may not even see as her own mother. God.
Yeah, Rika specifically did that.
But what really sells it for me is the way that Hanyu, as Rika saying, was it a dream? Was it a dream? Was it a dream? Hanyu's going, haha, of course it was. You must have just been having a bad dream. And then the music stops. Hanyu gets super serious and she goes, it was just a dream. That right there is super spelled out for me that, no, this is not a dream. Even Rika says, I could tell by the way that Hanyu responded, this wasn't a dream. Oh my God, I killed my own mother. And I think that like the way that you choose to interpret it, whether or not it was a dream, it does a lot for Hanyu, but even for, I guess, like the moral consequences of Rika, I guess, if you want to say. I mean, if it was just a dream, Rika still thinks to herself, regardless, I made that decision, that actual logical deduction that I made and chose to do an act as insane as kill my mother. That is something that she's going to have to live with, even if it wasn't a dream. And I guess luckily for her, if you want to look at it that way, she doesn't actually remember going through with the act of killing her mother. So in that regard, things are pretty well off, I guess. But she still, again, dream or not, she killed her mother. It's just the real big thing is more so like the weight of that world itself. And I think that it being a dream obviously does take a little bit away, but I don't think that it was a dream. It's just like, especially a little too much. I know Hanyu knows everything about everybody, but there's just some like specific details. Like, I don't know.
This book feels very much like a critique of Rika.
Yeah.
A critique of the character and all the different, like all of her flaws and all of the troubles that you'd have with a character and a situation like this that absolutely no one should have to go through. It's very direct in that way. I found it interesting. I found it interesting at the ending and the. It was, even for like something that was less than 4 hours long, it was still dragging for me.
Yeah,
it was like, I get it.
They're like, there has to be a world where everything goes right. Yeah,
yeah.
It just so happened that Rika got to that one after she died. Like, weird little coincidence, but you know.
And like what I liked was that, like, at least this is how I read it. I don't know if I just read it too fast or something, but like at first Rika is like, you know what? I'm gonna give this town a chance. I'm ready to make these people my friends again. And then she just wakes up. Oh fuck! Oh fuck! Oh fuck! I just blacked out.
Clearly, she had too much to drink.
She's just blackout drunk.
It's so twisted to see this like, what is supposed to be. I know she's 100, and so like in spirit, but like she's still technically Rika here. And
again, that's the thing. Is this Rika? Is this Burn Castell? The whole point of like the entire book is to explore that concept, and I love it. She constantly talks about how she's this careless, emotionless witch that's lived through hundreds of thousands of worlds and doesn't have a care about any of that stuff anymore. She just wants to go back to the world that she fought for and everything. But we do get to see how much this whole situation, like, really affects her, especially when she thinks about Satoko.
I don't know. There's this movie that I'm surprised we haven't made a reference to once, Groundhog Day.
Oh, God.
Which also has a character trapped in a time loop. And what I always think about is that, like, what if, and there's a very good chance that it's a way to interpret it, like, what if there's, like, in each of those timelines, in each of those time loops, like, you go through the time loop again, but also that you from that previous timeline just kept going. So if you killed yourself, then that timeline keeps going and everyone's dealing with the consequences of that, just like, why the hell did this little girl just go insane within a month? and kill her mother and then herself. And in a way, you can apply that to all the previous ones, and I think they did.
Yep, they sure did. She had this real drive to get back to the original world that she had fought for, and I think the story does a good job of presenting that. And I mean, in fairness, like I said before, regardless of whether or not you interpret it as a dream, you know, does it change the fact that Rika decided, logically, all right, killing mom time, it's still something that she's gonna have to live with no matter what.
Yeah, that's a good point. So she did kill her mom then in that universe.
It's never spelt out, I guess, but the fact that she thinks about it and mentally goes through with it, that's enough.
Random and I were talking about this earlier, and Random made the reference, the algae is always greener, and it's like, that's fine, but I was actually thinking of the Fairly Oddparents episode where Timmy Turner goes through It's a Wonderful Life, and it turns out that everybody's life is way happier if he was never born.
I get it, but also...
And so that's what I kept thinking about, it's just like, it sucks for me.
Which is why I like your guys' theory. I thought it literally just was a dream.
Well,
and
it's totally fine to take it at face value.
I don't want to take it at face value.
Yeah, I like it much more the other way too, don't get me wrong, but you can still interpret it as just a dream. It's a little bit much of Han Yudiko.
Yeah, like that's Shion levels of deviousness.
I was having a really hard time following Han Yun's explanation at the end that, like, she's actually her daughter? There was something about, like, the daughter killing the mother, and I didn't follow what, like, so who are you? What's going on here?
I struggled with that.
Because she said, my daughter killed me. Like, what? You're still here. I don't get it.
Yeah, honestly, it's all kind of really hard to follow, even for me. It's got something to do with how Hanyu became the guardian deity of Hinamizawa back in her own time when the descendant of Rika was alive and everything. And I mean, if that's what you're into Higurashi to, like, cool, eat. But it's just Hanyu decides to info dump all this stuff at the very end, and, like, sure, it's there. But all I could think of that whole time was, like, I get that she has to be taught this lesson, but... You're info dumping all of this onto her now and just being, like, really rude to her after you make her go through all of this stuff. You're even just gonna tell her that the right decision, just tell her to her face, was to let her die. You're gonna tell her this now?
Anyu is twisted, so maybe the It's a Dream thing isn't too far off.
Yeah. Anyway. I feel like I've gone on, like, four really long tirades already, but that's just what this story, the specific story, does. It's just such an interesting...
I'm really conflicted on whether I like it or not. Because on one hand, what you bring up does make me like it more. Because I didn't think of it like that, because I'm a simpleton. Who takes things at face value more of the time. Than anything. And I just thought Rika was kind of ungrateful. But now you're like... Okay, it's about her inner struggle of who she is, like, when and her not being the witch that can see through time and, like, knows about different alternate things, and she's just herself. That's cool. That's good. That is a hell of a better way ending and more satisfying than book 8.
Oh, God, yeah. Not even close.
And you know what? It's better because it has everyone talking at the end that matter. Mion, Rena, Kichi, even though he wasn't in most of this book either. He kind of got shafted.
He didn't get shafted. He has a better life because he actually adjusts to school properly rather than... This is It's a Wonderful Life, except everybody gets therapy. And I kind of... I found that interesting. And I also like the kind of conclusion that, like Rena is, and like we've been saying over and over again, that it's not our decision to make, that there's no real point in playing what if games. There is what we have and what we can do, and Rika could very easily just take what she has and just accept it and actually has and has a life where she can move on. And I think it's like in book 8, I think it's like it's, He says, I'm gonna grow boobs, damn it. I'm gonna make it through this month. Like, maybe she can finally have that and just move on. It's also just like, there's no turning back. So, it was all a dream.
Anyway, besides the point, yeah, the ending does make up for it in ways. And you did bring it to light where I'm like, okay, maybe I missed the point of the book in this one. Because I did read it as I did try to read it as best as I could, but book 8 burnt me out, man. It did. And I just...
And like, we said this, like, to each other, like, I think by the... in consequence of that, like, book 9 burned us out, even though it was, like...
better.
5 times shorter.
And better. I even 4 hours, like, oh, that's fine. And then I was, like, an hour in and, like, oh. It's...
Yeah, I was getting impatient. And I think it was, like I said, I think it's just, it kind of sagged a bit where it's like, okay, I'm starting to get it. And it's, when we're finally starting to hear more and more about, like, just how different everything is in the town, that was interesting. But it was still just very, it just dragged on.
Especially when Rika complained, I'm sorry. That really dragged for me. Like, I get it. I get she's upset, but it got to the point where she was like, I hate my mom. I don't like this world. And it just dragged for me. It really did.
It reminded me of Hanyu in book 7 just being like, just give up. Stop having hope. What are you doing? Stop.
You know what else complained about not having nearly enough hope?
The timer?
The timer. Oh my god, that felt great. It's been so long since I've been able to say that.
Yeah, did we?
Did we actually have a timer for this one?
Yeah, I set up a timer without telling either of you.
Oh.
Oh. Alright then, who would like to go first?
I'll go first. I think this was fine. Like I said, I enjoyed the ending, especially the, with Rena. It's definitely going for some headier ideas. Imagine that, Higurashi going for heady ideas. But it's good. It's wherever the ranking is, I will put this below, I'll put this slightly below book 4. It's fine. It's fine. There's no buddy cop stuff. No Akasaka or Uishi. But with what it is, it is serviceable. It drags down in some points. The choice is interesting. It's something that you can really like or really hate, depending on your interpretation. I still think that I'm still on the camp of, like, just give the current world a chance, because either way you're burnt out. But this is definitely like an interesting critique of Rika, and like what a time loop would actually do to a person, which is destroy them. Even when they're done with the time loop, they can never be truly done with the time loop. Because they're always having the knowledge of what could have been, and now suddenly there's a new future ahead, and she's not ready for it. And that's interesting. I don't know. Either of you can go next.
I'll go. I'm still kind of indifferent about this book. Do I like it better now that I talk about it and I realize? That it's not necessarily about the story. It's more about Rika. And yeah, I like the idea of critiquing her as a character. Because if we look at this and that, like, yeah, this is great. Because it does point out the flaws of, like, what if she was a time looper and what that does to a person. You see her psyche and how it, like, tortures her. Almost, that she will do anything, including kill her mom, to, get to the future that she specifically wants. And I like the point that, like, yeah, no, that's not something she has to deal with. And I do like the ending that wraps it off. It wraps it up better than book 8. It really does. There's just so many things about this, little things about this chapter that bother me, though. Like Rika getting hit by a car after all that time with book 8. The fact that the only new character that we get doesn't have a sprite. This is more of a technical thing. The fact that actually doesn't bother me. No, it doesn't bother me, but they do talk. They do actually talk to each other, and she actually tells him everything. And you know what? He does what he's supposed to do. He listens, but he also tells the parents immediately. Good for him. And the fact that like everything's just, and you do see what these characters would have been like. And yeah, it does feel hollow. And I understand why Rika doesn't like it, but like, I understand, like, maybe you should give this world a chance, but also I get it, and I'm just conflicted. Is it better than book 8? Hell yes. Hell yes. That ending alone is better than book 8. Is it my favorite? No, it's not. If I were to be honest, I probably would put it, I don't know remember my rankings entirely, but I think I would put it below 5.
No, your list is different from Wash's now.
Oh my god, finally. It took 9 books.
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
See,
there's only one person here who's actually keeping track of that.
Yeah, so I know that Wash likes book 5 the most.
No.
But it was, do I regret reading it? No. It's a fun little what if scenario that does wrap things up in a bow a little bit nicer. And it was interesting enough. And you know what? You explaining to me what my puny brain, tired brain did not get, the symbolism, because it wasn't spelled out to me, made me appreciate it more than I would have. Because honestly, if it weren't for that whole theory about like it being character study of Rika and like how it separates her from whatever her that name is that I kind of still think sounds ridiculous, but I get it. I probably would have put it lower. But now that you open that, I'm like, oh, that's actually really good. So, yeah.
I kind of want to add something. I just realized, like, something I didn't get to talk about much. I'll just say this really quick. What I also like about this book was the way that Rika grows antisocial is, it makes sense for, like, her scenario because she's living in a time loop, but also the stuff that she says is something that, like, hurt me because it was too real. Which is...
Oh, yeah.
Especially with just being like, everybody pities me. Fuck them. It was like, oh god, ow, ow!
Oh fuck. God, she's going through a middle school stage.
It's hurting.
yeah, almost like Ryukishi knows what he's writing about or something.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I didn't like this book. It felt too real.
It's like, oh, what happens if the time loop is real? Okay, what do you have to say?
Wasn't Random saying something?
No, I'm done.
Oh. Okay, well, if it wasn't already pretty clear, I am very fascinated by what this story tackles, like the morals, the messages, the dilemma of Rika. I can't lie, I mean, I do lament some things, like, there's no Keiichi, for example, that makes me really sad. No Oishi, like, this is our perfect opportunity to see Oishi ballroom dance, and he doesn't ballroom dance, like, give me my money back. The money that I didn't spend to watch this. but just this study of Rika, the decisions that she makes, and whether or not they were the right decision. I think this is one of the very few times that Higurashi is actually really hard carried by the story. I think the characters here are really good. There's Satoshi here, so I'm happy. We get to see this brattier side of Satoko. You get to see how Rena... at least on the outset, she doesn't change all that too much, and you do obviously know that Rena still has this hidden deep passion inside of her, but you pick up the pieces and you can see how Rena is different too. So you can see how the characters living better lives, so to speak, change how they are today in the current time of 1883 as we speak in 2022. But it's all such really genuinely interesting stuff, and I kind of especially like this as a bonus. Like we said, Higurashi 9 for a while wasn't really even considered as canon, so it's like, read it if you want, I guess. Like, be my guest, go right ahead. And even now that a lot more people are starting to see it as an actual 9th Higurashi and not just a bonus story that you can read if you feel like it. If you don't, that's fine too. And the wise words of Count Rancid or something like that. Paraphrase, but no, I really, really like this one. Super great time. It's also only like 4 hours. It's the length of book 4 after going through 8 in those freaking 5 minutes. This felt great. This felt really, 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 really nice.
This is definitely making me think, like, did I completely misread like book 5? Because like from like especially like book 8, I was like, oh, I like Saptosy in this, and here it's like, I really like Saptosy in this. Why didn't I like him in the first place? I don't know.
I mean, I still like him. He's
well,
fine.
To be fair, if you thought or said anything even remotely positive about him, then Shion would mark you as a target.
If anything, I didn't like him because Shion wouldn't shut the fuck up about him.
Exactly!
But honestly, he doesn't bother me.
Saptosy doesn't bother me.
She has to go. I'm sorry.
Ah!
Rory.
Random.
But yeah. If I were to rank this, it's not my favorite. It's not anywhere near 6. It's not my least favorite. It's not anywhere near 8. Due to the length, I would probably have to say that it would be comparable to Higurashi 4, but I definitely think this has a lot more going to it than Higurashi 4. I love 4. It's really grown on me over the years, but
yeah.
There's just so much more to this than 4, I think. Although, again, don't be sleeping on Higurashi 4. Much better than I initially gave it credit for. But compared to 6, 1... Mm. 7, 3, no. I'd probably also even have to put this below 5. Like, I know you two have your reservations with 5, but I really like it. The torture stuff doesn't really bother me quite as much, and Shion is just such a disaster that I really enjoy that story. But,
okay, okay. I can see that.
No, I do really like Higurashi 9, so I probably put it right below 5 and right above 4. That's where I would put it.
Not that it matters, but what were ours?
You two had the exact same list. I'll go bottom to top for both of you. 8, 2, 5, 4, 7, 1, 3, 6. Wash, you put 9 below 4. Mm-hmm. Random, put it below 5. So they're almost the same. It's just Random's okay with Shion's shenanigans a little bit more. I guess.
Okay. All right.
All right. So one last thing that I want to talk about before we sign out for the night. I was going to ask this last time, but we were all in such horribly sour moods when Higurashi 8 that I didn't really want to. But let's talk about the answer arcs. We did this for the question arcs when we finished 1 through 4. Let's do this for the answer arcs now. What did you think of the answer arcs overall? Their quality, the answers themselves, the characters, how they all evolved, satisfying answers, blah, blah, blah. What did we think? I'm going to try my best to mostly be quiet for this one, but I know stuff's going to come out of me.
Ooh,
it really depends on the book. Like 5 through 7 are so interesting. Say what I know. 5 isn't the best technically in our list, but seeing Shion spiral is cool.
For me, it's like 6 and 7. Five, my main thing is that, like, what it was gunning towards with like, this conspiracy was never a thing. It was just, like, I was just having such a hard time. Like, what? Then that means, and then my brain was hurting. So it was, and plus, like, the torture was just, like, no, please. It's just no. So like some of the answers. My overall thoughts in the arc is it's a roller coaster. It just goes. There's some high points, some low points, some what the fuck is going on?
There's some points where you feel you're stuck on the ride. Eight.
There's points where, like, the ride broke down and you just have to wait and wait.
Yeah. But honestly, I'm pretty satisfied with most of the answers that we got. Like, most of them.
I think I'm most satisfied with the answers regarding the friends. Like, the friend group. I'm satisfied with that. The overall conspiracy and the brain worms, I guess it makes sense when you put it that way. It's just one of those, okay.
It's more of like, yeah, okay, that wasn't satisfying as much. Because especially in 6, where they're like, yeah, no, that's all horse shit, and Takano just made up shit. Oh, wait, no, it's real.
No, it's for real.
I get it, and they really try and make it a thing, even though they also leave it ambiguous. Like, it couldn't be a thing. And I'm like, in the end, it could all be explained. Their mental health is terrible. Y'all need therapy. And I like that. I like y'all that, need therapy. Honestly. I like that better than any disease. And you know what? It adds on to Takano's character because she's trying to prove something that is false. But she's still trying to make... She's doing it for her grandfather to be recognized. And you know what? There's something interesting about that. Her just... destroying everything just for to do for a grandfather for something that's not real.
It's all in their heads.
And you know what? I wish Ryokichi stuck with his gun with what he did with 6. I'm sorry. I really did.
We talk about interpreting things, but you can even interpret the syndrome, like how big of a deal that is too. But I agree. It would have been nice if he stuck to what he said in Higurashi.
I think, as we've said many times, Ryukishi is very, very good at characters. When you get your characters together, then it really sings. And when you get into politics and global conspiracy and national conspiracy. You're starting to lose me a bit.
Okay. Well, real quick before we end, I guess I'll just throw out my thoughts real quick. I love the answer, RX. I do agree that in terms of quality, it is kind of a roller coaster. Again, I really like 5, so like 5, 6, and 7 for me, I think are really, really good. 5 less so than 6 and 7 to be sure, but I still really, really like them both.
Yeah. Like I said, roller coaster.
I know. It's like, it's just those 5 minutes. I know there's other things about Higurashi 8 that are good. A lot of the prelude, I think, is pretty interesting. I love seeing Hakasaka. Ryukishi freaking made me like Okanogi, the sharp nose cut off a tree branch. Like that guy. Ryukishi made me like that guy.
You know why?
It's not some
because
random bozo.
It centers everything around characters.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, I still love Higurashi, so it doesn't ruin the whole experience. But, oh my god, it was 5 minutes. And like I said, there's things that I like about Higurashi 8. I like chapter 5, for example.
Like, you can't, if you're gonna tell me the politics and all that, put characters in there.
Overall, I it wasn't that long of a ramble, but I really love the answer arc. Just sucks about those 5 minutes.
He figures out, like, motivations and figures out different personalities. With Okanogi.
Very sharp nose.
That nose. Okanogi is the kind of weirdo that's just like, no, I'm fighting them myself.
I have to do this.
It accomplishes nothing. But for him, it's the most important thing is to beat this 17-year-old girl.
Maybe. We don't know her age. He doesn't care. Yeah, and it's very hard to talk about it without aid because it is the ending. But you know what I do like? I do like how they sprinkle the answers in. It's not just all solved at once until like 8, where it's all solved at one chapter. but everything else is kind of sprinkled. Even 5, where everything's wrong, everything Shion thinks is wrong. But like, you still get some answers there.
Yeah, and at the very least, you're following Shion. I mean, I pick on her a lot because well, I mean, one, she deserves it, two, it's really fun.
Yeah.
But I also know nobody believes me when I say this, I'm sure, but I really love Shion as a character. She's such a disaster. And seeing that downward spiral and just following that and just seeing how, like, no, this actually does line up. But I do agree that the way that Chapter 5 kind of feeds you its information, I think is far more interesting.
Eight is dump.
We're going to pretend 8 didn't exist except for the Home Alone scenes.
It's just harder to talk about because we just have such conflicting feelings on it.
Oh, well, mine aren't conflicted at all. I hate those 5 minutes. The rest of the story, for the most part, I think is fine. But, those 5 minutes. I do like Chapter 5, though. I know it's contentious, but I like Chapter 5.
I still can't agree with you on Chapter 5. I'm sorry. And it's maybe because it's just I feel pacing-wise, it's just too much. I think it's just too much. Honestly, the points, there were some points in this where I just wanted to read it. And I wanted to read it as fast as possible. Like, I just couldn't put the page down. And that was 1. And that was 4. And
6.
And you know what? You know, 3, 2. 3 as well. I'll say 3.
I always say that for 7. And then 8 would just like, I gotta get this over with.
Oh, God, Higo 8. Anyway, like, the length never really bothered me. I've said this a million times, but as long as everything stays interesting, I am engaged enough to where I don't really think it takes that long. Even if it does, it doesn't feel like it takes very long.
Yeah, because you want to know how this goes, like, what...
We can talk about the issues with Higurashi 8, some of the pacing problems that the Answer Arcs themselves had, blah, 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 but overall, it's just... It's such a thrilling experience.
Like, the whole town. You even like, convincing Oyo. Like, hell yeah.
Yeah, and just Keiichi and Higu 6 and 7 in general. I remember during the question arcs, you two had a lot of comments about him kind of being, like, not that great. But just look at him now, all the things that he does. Even in Higurashi 5, like, we get to see that one line he has to Shion about how, you're not Mion, how, like, that kind of tilts her for a second. But of course, I'm talking about, like, you know, Higurashi 6, him realizing what he did in his previous lives and succeeding in saving Rena. Even earlier than that, when they discover Tepe and Rena's bodies, Keiichi's the one that really unites everybody together and says, like, you know, we're here. Like, we're still friends. We can forgive her because she didn't do this terrible thing. And then that translates to 7, Keiichi motivating Rika to not give up. When Tepe shows up, as Rika describes as the single worst reality where I just give up immediately. Keiichi bringing everybody together.
You know what 8 didn't do? Have the whole village come to help out.
Very true. I want to talk a little bit more about the real MVP of Higurashi, the Rena-centric story. Higurashi 6.
It's so good. From the very beginning. Like that water gun fight.
Yes, yeah. the water gun fight. Oh my god.
From the beginning to end.
That is the best club activity. Easy. Like, hands down, free.
That chapter at the end was long, but you know what? It didn't feel long. It didn't feel like a roller coaster.
I remember telling you two that this chapter is, like, really, really long. Don't feel pressured to read it all in one sitting, but both of you basically did just
that.
I thought
I was going to, but, like, no, it was... It was tense, it was emotional, it was fast-paced.
It became a completely different kind of story. Like, we were expecting, like, torture shit, and instead it becomes a heist movie.
It becomes a heist thriller.
Yelling at Keiichi to get off the rooftop.
My Marathon, go!
It becomes an action movie.
It was so high-stake, and then the end where they're just, like, fighting with the bat and the hatchet. And, like, it's like they're doing a sword fighting competition.
Yeah, like, I think about the very end of that when Rena actually snapped out of it. That just makes me cry like a baby every time because I identify with Rena so much. But then they're just throwing the one-liners back and forth. Rena has that best line in all of Higurashi about protecting the species from the aliens. This will go down in human history. Like, it's so good. It's so good.
I like the... And this is, of course, the moment where we realize that the time loop is for real, because, like, Keiichi has that revelation, and he's, like, crying about it, and his friends are like, okay, but we don't care. I know you got some issues, but like this, it doesn't really change how I think of you. It's fine. And also, it's like I feel like the unraveling of Rena, I like better. In terms of like the conspiracy stuff, I like that better than with 5, where it was just. I guess it was just specifically that like Xion literally created the whole conspiracy herself. Was just like, wow, okay.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
But in this case, like, self-fulfilling prophecy, exactly. And in this case, Rena is more reacting to a supposed conspiracy, which turns out to be an actual conspiracy. And she just becomes a bomber. She goes insane.
Oh, yeah, Gachion is the pure image of sanity.
It's...
So, again, roller coaster for me. It's got some ups and downs. I like the core of 6 and 7. 5 is spotty for me. I like some of it, but it's spotty. And 8 is 8. 9... We've been talking about all those. It's like, I don't know that I can really consider 9 as part of the answers arc.
I don't think I would either. I just didn't want to talk about all of this after 8 when we were all pretty angry and I was acting like the 19-year-old me.
Because, like, it's like 9, there's no new revelations here. I guess unless you want to go into Hanyu. But I didn't understand that, and like, frankly, like, you do you, Hanyu, I don't care. That doesn't change how I think of you.
Yeah, I will say this. Hanyu was something I did not expect in the answers arc. I did not, if you would have told me, magical girl.
Yeah, a brand new character ended at the final acts of this whole story.
I mean, also Okanogi, but he technically was in 4. Technically.
Oh, no, and also 6, right?
Yeah, he's in the van that Rena is really suspicious of, thinks that it's hunting her down.
Yeah, the van.
He talks to Keiichi about it, which is why when they get to the school, Keiichi's like, oh, what are these guys doing here? And the principal's like, oh, they're just gardeners. And Rena mishears like one or two words, and she's like, everybody in the world is out to get me.
And it turns out, like, no, we're not trying to kill you. We're not trying to kill you specifically. We're trying to kill the whole town. It's like, it's not you. It's everyone.
And isn't that classic Higurashi? But, okay, that went on, like, a lot longer than I thought it would, so I guess that's enough for one podcast. I guess we should talk about what we're going to do going forward then, right? Because we are not done with When They Podcast just yet. We still got a few more surprises under our belts. Up next, so Higurashi had its original 8 books, right? Like that original 8 run at the Comic Cat, and then that bonus arc released, and I mean there's been other stuff that's come out since. But specifically what I've been really interested in taking a look at are the PS2 exclusive arcs, or console arcs as they're called, since they've been ported since, but the PS2 arcs or the console arcs are very interesting. Because with one general exception, which Ryukishi mostly just kind of read over and was like, okay, you're good, you have my blessing on this. With that one as the exception, all of these were not written or really even, like, edited by him. He has no involvement. That's the word I'm thinking of. No involvement with any of these, and I think that's going to make it super interesting. I'm really curious to see how a different writer can take these characters and, like, where they're going to go and all that. And as you can tell by my tone and everything, I have never read any of the console arcs. So this should be interesting. I have no idea how good or how bad this one is going to be. It is very short, so it does have that going for it. But there is another little surprise that we have going into this. Wash, would you like to take over for this one?
So if you are watching us in the YouTube, if you're listening to us, then first subscribe to our YouTube channel. More on that later. But, if you're watching us on YouTube, you may notice the extremely cool and high-quality sprites, custom sprites in the style of Ryukishi, that are bobbing up and down in the YouTube videos. And that is because of a good artist that I met on another Discord server named Nathan. goes by coolest penis on Twitter, and I just happen to know that that he really likes Higurashi and especially Umineko. Is that how you pronounce it?
Umineko, yeah.
Okay.
I've tried so hard throughout this entire podcast not to bring it up, but oh my god, I would love to cover Umineko for the podcast someday.
So I reached out to him and asked to make this request. Super cool. Does a anime club in another server, so I ended up watching a good amount of anime because of him, including the Higurashi anime, up to book 4, because that was as far as we went in this podcast. But I just figured, you know what, you're cool, I want to have you on the podcast, and hopefully they'll show up, and we don't get the sad situation we've answered. We'll see what happens next time. But I'm excited to have a brand new guest over, and you can check out the next guest by subscribing to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/WRKpodcast. You can also post your comments on there. And you can follow us on Twitter, at WRKpodcast. We'll let you know when the next episode comes out, which is going to be the one with the special guest. And you can listen to us in audio form if you haven't already at wrk.simplecast.com and wherever else you may get your podcast. With that, I am The Wash.
I'm Random Frederica Budweiser here.
Barb Budweiser.
I forgot the name.
Budweiser. Every single one of them.
What? Frederica. Would you be?
Oh my god.
It's gone. it's gone.
Oh god.
It's gone. Give me a break.
It's gone like Rika's mom. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Let me know in the comments if you noticed that I had lost my audio for our recording and I had to re-record it from what I remembered and insert it in the video and post. Let me know in the comments. Bye.